Speaking on this program is Brother Ron Causby.
We have presented some various standards that are given to us to uphold by those who don't believe in God. Of course, their standards would fall through. They are inconsistent in and of themselves. So let's turn our attention to the inconsistencies, the immorality, and the hopelessness of atheism. Those who refuse to believe in God, first of all, present a baffling behavior to mankind. Now, being a fellow who likes to get on the internet, and since all sorts of beliefs are now being presented through the medium of the computer, I was able to find an internet spokesman for atheism. Now, this particular spokesman agrees with George Bernard Shaw of years gone by, a great atheist in the eyes of atheists, of course. Now, this internet spokesman says concerning Mr. Shaw that he was, quote, one of the 20th century's great literary minds. He was also a spokesman for socialism, says the writer, vegetarianism, an outspoken atheist, and animal rights advocate. Did you hear that? Furthermore, this particular writer says, I share a similar philosophical view of Mr. Shaw. Now, this fellow who shares a similar philosophical view with Mr. Shaw is also a fellow who is an abortionist. Now, let me tell you something that George Bernard Shaw and this abortionist agrees with Mr. Shaw. This internet spokesman recognizes that Shaw said, animals are my friends, and I don't eat my friends. So you see the standard of this atheist. Now watch the baffling behavior that is presented. What do you think of somebody who would protect animals, yet not protect babies? For instance, in 1972, this one year alone, more babies were killed by illegal abortion in California than were American servicemen killed in Vietnam, Korea, the Spanish War, the Mexican War, the 1812, and the Revolutionary War all put together. In 1980, there were 1.5 million legal abortions, one-third of which took place in just 3 states. So we can see that millions per year of our unborn babies are dying. Who's holding up and shouting and speaking up for those? Yet on the other hand, our animal rights advocates, such as our internet spokesman and George Bernard Shaw, whose friends are animals and he doesn't eat his friends, but what about babies? I wonder if they're his friends. They, on the other hand, would protect the snail darter. You may remember that several years ago, a government project to provide a dam for a certain region and add jobs to that region was stopped dead cold because there was a little bitty snail darter running around. And because this was an extinct animal, because he was protected by our government, by animal rights advocates, the dam was never finished. They're all for animals, and they're all for fish. On the other hand, murdering the child by the thousands daily. What an awful inconsistency in morality. Now, make sure we understand, I'm not saying that the animal rights advocates are killing children. But we ought to hear as much of a hue and a cry from them concerning the unborn infants as we hear about the snail darter. Their behavior is baffling, and it's inconsistent. Not only is it inconsistent, but it's also immoral. Some non-Christians see the dilemma of admitting that evil exists, so they simply do away with all moral standards. There is no evil, and they seek to fulfill lust, regardless of who it may hurt. Notice, first of all, our quote from Mr. Edward Gibbon. He says, for myself, the philosophy of meaninglessness was essentially an instrument of liberation sexually and politically. As we go through, you're going to notice the immorality of those who hold that which Mr. Gibbon has just expressed. And it's because they see that if they admit that there's evil in the world, then they admit that there's a standard for all. And if there's a standard, an objective standard, then there is God. And they can't have that, because then there is no liberation for them in any area. They must be mastered by God. That's the way they look at it. But of course, we look at it as receiving guidance from a loving Father. Let's notice some of their immorality. Paul Kurtz, a humanist of today, in the Dallas Morning News, there is a report of him. In this Dallas Morning News, the writer would give highlights of a debate between Mr. Kurtz and a professed Christian. In this particular debate between the two scholars, the question is, who needs God? Now, taking the non-theistic view, this professor of philosophy at the State University of New York, he would let it be known that, why, you can be moral and ethical without the Bible. Here's what he said specifically. Indeed, many heroes and heroines of American history have rejected biblical morality and led ethical lives, such as Tom Paine, Robert Ingersoll, Mark Twain, Clarence Darrow, Margaret Sanger, and Isaac Asimov. Now, whenever you look at Tom Paine and Mark Twain's life, you may want to kind of wonder whether or not this fellow wants to reveal what they did in their life. But what I want you to do is look closer at Margaret Sanger. Now, remember that this humanist, Mr. Paul Kurtz, in the debate, is upholding Margaret as someone who led an ethical life. She is one of our heroines, and she was good, even though she didn't have the Bible. Now, the person I'm quoting from is not an enemy of Margaret. It's somebody that knows her very closely, writing, and here's what is said, some of the things that are said. After she left her husband, she began to publish a paper, which she appropriately called The Woman Rebel. Now, keep in mind that this Margaret Sanger founded the Planned Parenthood and in 1957 was elected as the Humanist of the Year. Therefore, she is a good example of the type of morals that they would lead. Well, she founded this paper, The Moral Rebel, and its slogan was, No Gods, No Masters. Now, you know what I meant earlier by God being the master. She said the first issue denounced marriage as a degenerate institution, capitalism as indecent exploitation, and sexual modesty as obscene. In another article, she advocated that women claim the following rights. Quote, the right to be lazy, the right to be an unmarried mother, the right to destroy, and the right to love. She was indicted for publishing lewd and indecent materials, so she fled to England, leaving not only her husband, but abandoning or leaving her children behind. What did she do in England? It was said by one who is a socialist. Her bed became a veritable meeting place for the high socialites, the upper crust. And she began her unusual and tempestuous affair with one of the famous socialists of that day. Now, I want you to consider a summary, a brief summary, of this ethical, high ethical, as it would be said, person who has moral responsibility. Here is a woman who, number one, broke her wedding vows, number two, violated the laws of this nation, number three, deserted her children. Number four, manipulated people. Number five, advocated and practiced sexual promiscuity, would have overthrown our government if she could have. And seventh, openly endorsed the euthanasia, the sterilization, the abortion, and the the killing of children, the programs of Nazi Germany. Mr. Kurtz, you need to find somebody else of moral ethics, because Margaret Sanger falls far short. Well, let's turn our attention from an individual and let's see the immorality of a town. Several years ago, I read of a group who, around the turn of the century, a group of atheists decided to show the world what a fine civilization could be built if they could only do away with the, quote, superstitions of Christianity. So they eliminated the superstitions of Christianity, and they founded a little town named Liberal, Missouri. They boastingly advertised that it was the only town of its kind in the United States. It was without preacher, priest, church, God, Christ, hell, or the devil. Or they think it was, anyway. Some months later, after the establishment of this particular town, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch carried a lengthy story about the town of Liberal, Missouri. It was pictured as the seat of the devil, as a den of iniquity. Its hotels were brothels. Vice had become virtue. Gambling, stealing, drunkenness, and brawls were the usual occurrences of the day. Liberal Missouri didn't like that, and so they sued the writer, Clark Braden, for $25,000. Now, this is at the turn of the century. $25,000 was a tremendous sum of money. In the trial, the evidence of wickedness was so overwhelming that Mr. Braden won the suit, and Liberal Missouri had to pay the court cost. Indeed, one of the inhabitants, one of their number, confessed, since it was so bad and there was such a dismal failure of this all-atheist town, no Christianity at all, no morals, one of their number confessed. An infidel surrounded by Christians may spout his infidelity and be able to endure it. But a town of atheists was too horrible to contemplate. The inhabitant is exactly right. It is a bad situation. The immorality is just too much. We go from an individual to a town to a nation. The nation of Voltaire. Students of history will remember the writings of Paine and the writings of Voltaire. For instance, in 1778, Voltaire boasted and said, "It took 12 men to originate the Christian religion, but it will take but one to eliminate it. And within 50 years from now, the only Bible will be in museums." Well, he did what he could to vote God out of existence. One scholar wrote concerning France during the period of the influence of Voltaire and Paine. The Bible was suppressed. God was denied. And he uses hell in a certain way that it broke loose. Half of the children born in Paris were illegitimate. One writer went on to say that they took out of the sewage system 10,000 infants, unborn infants, every year. They had something like 35 revolutions in a very short period of time. Crime and violence overran the country to such a point that somebody suggested that if there wasn't a God in France, they had better invent one soon. You see, that's the result of atheism. Besides the baffling behavior, you have such a point of immorality. But something that is very sad in the midst and the effects of atheism is the total, absolute hopelessness that they have to endure. Now, sometimes we illustrate this somewhat comically. For instance, the story is told of an atheist who's laying in his casket, and he's all decked out in his new attire. They dressed him up for this occasion. A friend who many times had heard his dead friend, his atheist friend, boast how God did not exist and how that he didn't have to have God and he didn't have to have heaven or hell, The friend said, "Well, there's old Pete, all dressed up and no place to go. Oh, where is Pete going? With his philosophy, nowhere. But I wonder, where is old Pete today? Nowhere? That's atheism, not Christianity." Another illustration is that there was a skeptic who was deriding a Christian, and he asked him, "What are you going to say if, whenever you die, you find out that there is no place such as heaven or hell?" The Christian replied and said, "Well, I would say that it's fine. It was better trying to get there anyway, and life is better." But then the Christian laid a booming blow against the atheist. He said, "Say, what would you do if when you die, you find there is such a place as hell?" Well, the atheist thinks there is hopelessness, but it maybe get worse, and they need to awaken to it. Hopelessness tortures the mind and the well-being of the atheist when he begins to reflect on death. There is a driving something in man that says, surely there's more than this life. But whenever the atheist says, surely there is more than this life, he becomes totally afraid and frightened. A German philosopher said this, "Where is my home? For it do I ask and seek, and have sought, but have not found it. O eternity, everywhere. O eternity, nowhere. O eternal, in vain." Then we have this particular statement from Robert Ingersoll as he was standing over the grave of his brother. "Life is a narrow veil between the cold and barren peaks of two eternities. We strive in vain to look beyond the heights. We cry aloud, and the only answer is the echo of a wailing cry. From the voiceless lips of the unreplying dead, there comes no word. But in the night of death, hope sees a star. Listening love can hear the rustle of the wind. He who sleeps here when dying, mistaking the approach of death for the return of health, whispered with his last breath, 'I am better now.' Let us believe, in spite of doubts and dogmas, tears and fears, that these dear words are true of all the countless dead." Better? Yes, you see, if you suffer in this world, to the atheist, the best he can hope for is nothingness. But Mr. Ingersoll did not like that view when it came to it. H.G. Wells, exhibiting and stating this same hopelessness and fear, said, "There is no way out or around or through. It is the end." Voltaire would say this, "Strike out a few sages, a few wise men, and the crowd of human beings is nothing but a horrible assemblage of unfortunate criminals. And the globe contains nothing but corpses. I tremble to have to complain once more to the Being of Beings in casting an attentive eye over this terrible picture. I wish I had never been born." It would seem like Mr. Voltaire was hoping there was a God and then hoping there wasn't a God. But that's the dilemma that the atheist finds himself in. He would hope. But hope for what? He has been immoral, because that's what atheism leads to. He becomes baffling in his behavior. In one minute he upholds the value of animal life and devalues the life of the infant, of children, of human beings. But the death blow, that which just empties out all that he is to stand over the grave of a friend, stand over the grave of a relative and a loved one, and to see they will see them no more. At least that's the way their view of life is. Sometimes you kind of wonder what Adam thought when he stood over the grave of his son, Abel. Here was the first death that we have recorded. What was going through his mind? Well, a great deal more better, you got that? A great deal more, and it was better than that which was going through the minds of Voltaire, H.G. Wells, or any other philosopher who is an unbeliever. Because any other philosopher, when it comes time to unbelief, when it comes time to the grave and their unbelief, all they can do is have an absolute emptiness. Several years ago, when I was about the age of 12, I remember watching a show that I was told not to watch. Ed Sullivan came on and he said, "Now, parents, if you have children that are 12 and under, don't let them watch this." Well, I was 12. I could watch it. But here's what occurred. A fellow had made a film of the earth. And then he zoomed in, and here were all the human beings walking around, cheerfully walking. All of a sudden, they heard kind of a buzz bomber, like the World War II buzz bombers. And it flew over the top of them. Momentarily, all the human beings, their flesh dropped off, and there were only the bones, the skeletons. And then shortly thereafter, they began to crumble, and they turned to dust. The buzz bomber turned into a moth and flew out around into orbit like like one of our satellites in orbit or around the earth. And now you can see the moth and the stars and the earth. All of a sudden, the stars disappear. Just turns black. And then in the film, the earth turns into a flickering flame. And the moth is, like most moths, flying over the heat. And then pretty soon the flame flicks up and gets the moth. And it's gone. And then slowly, the flame dies out. And then, there was nothingness. As I lay out times after that, I could think of nothingness. And when you contemplate and reflect and meditate upon absolute nothingness, when you realize that you are nothing, it is absolutely frightening, especially for a 12-year-old. You can see the hopelessness in other religious systems and see what they've produced. The doctrine of Confucianism gave a great nation moral and mental dry rot. The teachings of Buddha resulted in mental and moral chaos that makes India derelict. Now, don't misunderstand me. The people are not. It's the religious system. After all, it teaches that you are reincarnated. And the cow that's walking around in the yard may be mom and dad. And that's what it produces. And culminating in going through all of the various reincarnations is annihilation. And that's all you have to look forward to. Islam offers men a hedonistic garden filled with women and all that they want that would fulfill the fleshly desires. I've always wondered, what does Islam offer women? Well, you can see that these systems have produced the various problems in their various nations. Well, America has problems too. Yes, because they ignore Christianity, not because they follow it. If they would follow Christianity, crime would be done away with. Insurance would be done away. There are so many things that would be done away with, we can't even start counting on what they are. But it would be a great world if men would treat each other the way the Bible teaches us to treat each other. In contrast to what atheism has for us, Christianity holds out great hope, great joy, high morality, and you are not confused as to who you are, where you are going, and why you are here. you know exactly.